Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello and welcome to Around the Corner, the CoveringTheCorner.com Cleveland Guardians prospect podcast. I'm Matt Schlichting, joined as always by Brian Heminger. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing amazing. It's been a nice 2 weeks for Guardians prospects.
I'm excited to talk about them, but first, we were discussing just a moment ago that today, Taco Bell brought back the Mexican pizza. I did not know this and elected to go to Taco Bell for dinner, and 1 hour later, I left with my Crunchwrap like a dipshit.
Yeah, that's going to happen. You just got to pay attention to the news, man. I mean, people been campaigning to bring that Mexican pizza back ever since it left the menu. So it was it was basically a semi-national holiday, Mexican Pizza Day. I'm not going to lie. I had two. They were delicious. I should have got three.
Such wise words. I think it's time to transition right into the top 10 players in the system, as voted by CoveringTheCorner.com readers. As always, we'll start with number one, George Valera. How was Sir George?
I'd say slightly below average, but nothing, you know, concerning. He, in his 2 week span here, he played 10 games, had a slash line of 216, 326, 297. Good for a WRC plus of 82. Over that time period, he had three doubles, walked six times, struck out 12. Nothing real crazy there, just a slightly below average. Nothing that's going to be forcing anybody's hand or getting promoted. But if that's George Valera when he's struggling, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and we've made some upgrades to how we're tracking the stats this year, so it's a little easier to flip between weeks. Mm-hmm. He rocked a 76 WRC plus two fortnights ago.
Yeah, so it's been a pretty much a whole month now of him being slightly below average.
Which, this is his first time at the level, right?
He did get called up to AA at the end of last season.
Okay.
But when he got called up last year, he had a high BABIP that was not, so like his stats were good, but they weren't reflective of like his walk and strikeout rates. So I was like, I was shouting from the rooftops, hey, you know, George might need a little bit more seasoning in AA first before we, you know, put him on the roster at the major league level. So that's pretty much where he is right now. I mean, if he's struggling right now and at a 27K rate, that's not that bad because he's still maintaining an elite walk rate, 14%. And that strikeout rate will go down when, you know, he's just seeing the ball a little bit better.
I'd have to agree with you. Assuming he continues to progress, I think that's where we'll probably start to see him turn the corner, is that, just like you said, that's where we're going to see the evidence of him seeing the pitches better, getting more familiar with the league and the environment, etc. So it'll be fun to keep an eye on him.
Nothing too crazy there. But next up, we've got our boy Brian Rocchio. He had a unique 2 weeks because basically he played about three games, then went on the injured list from and did not play from May 8th all the way to May 16th. Then he got activated from the injured list on Tuesday and has played the last, you know, 2 days. Only played five games, but they were a pretty impressive five games.
He's been on fire. He's slashed 308, 526. 462, good for a 189 WRC plus with a BABIP of 444. So, I mean, there's hard contact in there, so of course, but obviously 444 is going to come back some to the fold. But the big thing is a 31.6% walk rate. What? Jeez, how? I mean, 6 walks in 5 games. And then he stole 3 bases on top of it. Calm down.
Yeah, that's what's been interesting was in these 2 games that he's been back, he doesn't have a hit, but he's walked 4 times and stolen 2 bases. So
it's basically, it's 2 free doubles. Just for
that's the thing that we like about, you know, like Kwan, where even if right now he's slumping with hitting the ball, like he's just, every time he hits the ball, it's going to somebody, but he's still walking once or twice a game. He's still getting on base. And that's where you still maintain consistency and avoid slumps. So I'm really liking this improved walk rate with Rocchio. That just makes him more valuable.
Especially with as sharp as his defense is.
And while he doesn't have quite the light tower power that Valera has, he runs into one every once in a while too. And it usually looks pretty nice coming off the bat. He can send him a long way for how tiny he is.
I just sort of think of it as Jose Ramirez energy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3 on our countdown is Tyler Freeman, and he had himself a very nice week as well.
Very nice week. Very impressive to see him. Because, as we mentioned, you know, he had a little bit of growing pains, shaking off the rust of all the not playing the last half of last season and then missing the beginning of this season, the shoulder surgery. It seems like he's back into Tyler Freeman form.
Yes.
These this past 2 weeks.
A much.
Yeah, he slashed .286, .386, .429. Now, you're wondering, how does his on-base percentage spike 100 points higher than his batting average when he never walks?
And so, the way I want to pose this to listeners before we give them the answer is, how many walks do you think he had in 49
at-bats? Or 57 plate appearances.
Yeah. How does that math break down, listeners?
If you haven't figured it out, yeah, he only had 2 walks. So, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. That's by itself excellent over a 2-week span. But 6 hit by pitches. This is something. Now, if you go back and track Tyler Freeman's stats, he has consistently been getting hit by pitches his entire career. He's not quite Brandon Guyer level.
I don't know, man. We might be seeing him truly blossoming into an artist of just.
Yeah, he's been getting blasted by pitches this time. Let's check here. Because look, all right. 2018, he played 72 games. How many hit by pitches do you think he would have in 72 games?
So if he was normal, I'd guess like 3, but because it's Tyler Freeman, I'm going to say 19.
It was exactly 19.
Get out. There's no way I guessed that.
You really guessed it, yeah. And how did he follow that up? 2019 was his first year at full season ball, where he played 123 games. How many times do you think he got hit then?
Okay. There's no way I guess correctly twice in a row, so I'm going to say 17.
He got hit 17 times at regular A ball. Then he got promoted to A plus and got hit 7 more. Yeah, in 120 games.
Some guys don't even walk that much.
Yeah. Well,
that's crazy.
Let's check.
I haven't been this like over the moon about something since you introduced me to Bieber.
So Freeman got hit 24 times that season. He walked to 26.
Look, man, we've always said if you get on base 40% of the time or so, it doesn't matter. And I guess he took it to heart.
What's impressive this season so far is he's been hit 8 times. So even 2 last week, when we were covering last podcast, he's only struck out 5. So pitchers are hitting him more than he is striking out.
So we're just going to let, I'm just going to go down the rabbit
hole. He's on pace right now to get hit more than once every other game. He's played 15 games. He's been hit 8 times. We're just the human pincushion, basically.
Here we go. career hit by pitch leaders, Biggio.
Oh, yeah. Biggio was always crowding the plate.
That's who I was trying to think of from more recent times, who was just really good at getting hit by pitches. Rizzo as well comes to mind. But Huey Jennings, the legend, hit by 287 pitches in 5,648 plate appearances. You may know him from such teams as nothing after 1920.
Okay. So he was getting hit by spitballs. Okay.
So it's certainly true that there are some guys that just are able to get on base this way. Frank Robinson and Chase Utley are in the top 10 all time as well. So who knows? Maybe it's a tool.
It's a skill.
Yeah. So now we've got the middle of our countdown, and it's a little sad. Daniel Espino's at number 4. He did not play due to injury.
Yeah, he was expected to miss 1 week with a little bit of knee tendonitis, and they're playing it safe. He did not pitch this past week either. Hopefully he's back on the mound next week. I have not heard anything.
So we will keep our fingers crossed there and hope we get some news soon. Number 5, Gabriel Arias.
Recovering on the injured list with a broken hand. Hopefully, I think when they placed him on the injured list, they said a month and a half or so expected time off. So we're right now about 2 weeks in, a little over.
Number 6.
I do have a positive update.
News.
Yes.
News.
So, and this comes from the man himself, Nolan Jones.
Did you guys bump into each other?
I did not, but I did see his Instagram page.
Well, there you go.
And it was mentioned that, you know, Jones wasn't going to be that far behind Tyler Freeman in terms of being activated. And I think 2 days ago, he made a post on his Instagram page of him in the outfield, and it just said, soon.
Soon.
That was the only caption. So, good news. We should be seeing Nolan Jones very shortly.
That's fantastic.
So, I mean, he would not be posting that if he was still a month away. If he did, I would be very upset with him.
This brings us to the back half of the top. Not half, back half. You know what? Number 7, Logan T. Allen. Brian, take it away.
Yeah, Logan T. Allen had a very strange 2 starts. So he had 1 regular boring start. And then in his next start, he struck out 10 batters in 5 innings with no walks. That's usually amazing, right?
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, he gave up, I think, was it all 8 or 7?
Seven earned runs in that one.
He gave up 7 earned runs. I think 4 home runs.
I counted 3.
Okay, 3 home runs.
Not a great time.
So he had a crazy, like, numbers. I mean, you want a guy that's going to be striking out 2 per inning. 10 strikeouts in 5 innings with no walks is sensational. But, you know, sometimes they just hit their spots. And when he threw it in the zone, a couple guys ran into it. So he had very, very strange 2-week stat line of a 6.55 ERA, 16 strikeouts, 1 walk over 11 innings pitched.
And this is where, looking at the advanced stats, who the heck knows what happened in that game? Because he still struck out that many guys.
Yeah, I mean, he was pitching well.
The only thing you really dock him for is giving up 3 home runs.
Yep.
It's not like...
Sometimes you get hit.
His whip was really not even that crazy. And yeah, weird week, or 2 weeks.
I mean, elite strikeout to walk ratio. So, yeah. So nothing, you know, that we can't see improved. I mean, I guarantee that he is probably going to have very similar strikeout to walk ratios in our next podcast, and his ERA is going to be back where it normally is.
Yeah. I was just trying to think about how to describe it. He doesn't have to change anything about what he's doing, but the outcomes will fix themselves, I guess.
Like, to me, this is an outlier.
Yeah.
Like, everything else about that start was great.
They just squared a few up. Shit. Number 8.
Gavin Williams. Gavin's gonna Gavin.
This was a stupidly good couple of weeks.
Yeah. So how did Gavin do over his two starts?
He pitched 10 and two thirds.
Okay.
Struck out 16 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave him a good old fashioned ERA of 0.84. Striking out 39% of hitters faced, walking only 7.3%, 3 walks total. He threw a wild pitch, though.
Yeah.
Come on.
There was a report this week that he was getting promoted to AA, and then in a rare instance, they went, oh, my source was wrong. So,
who was the they that had done the reporting?
Yeah, it was Todd Peckett. I mean, normally he is on point.
Yeah.
So I was retweeting it saying, oh, man, this is amazing. I knew this would happen. And then all of a sudden he was listed as the next starter for Lake County. And he's like,
makes me curious about how media folks and news folks handle stories and figure out sources and who they can and can't trust.
Like I have some
West
people,
Wing intrigue.
Yeah. Like I have a few people that I reach out to, like to set up interviews and do things like that. But I'm not the kind of guy that's trying to like break news.
We don't break
news with the Cleveland system.
These are all stats people could go read. We just do it for you.
Yeah. I mean, I do like to event every once in a while, you know, interview a player and, you know, share their story and stuff. But yeah, I'm not the type that's going to be like, oh, this guy's getting promoted. This guy was released. Like, oh, this guy, you know, he's going on the injured list. Yeah, there's other people that are getting paid more money to do that. So
I feel like it's a lot more fun to go listen to this dude hit this. What?
Yeah. But I still, even though it didn't happen, it's only a matter of time. Like he is. Like right now, there's 6 elite pitchers at AA. So the second one of those guys does get promoted to AAA, Gavin's going to replace them.
And like, he's almost pitching too well at this point.
He's not getting challenged. He is not getting challenged, even though this is his pro debut.
Like, some college arms, though.
Like, yeah, they started him at high A, like skipping rookies, skipping low A, and like he is not being challenged. You're right. Like this is like him pitching to little leaguers at this point. So get him up to AA. I think he might be on AA. If not by next podcast, the one after. It'll just depend if there's an opening in the AA rotation. Cause sometimes, you know, they'll move up an org guy that can just fill a spot. But you know, when it really matters, when you get excited is when they move up that top prospect. And I think that he's ready.
I guess sometimes there is a college arm who, like Lincecum being an example, like there's really no reason to keep them in the minors any longer than you need to, because you're really just preventing them from winning Cy Young awards, it turns out. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that's what's going to happen here, but sometimes a player just shoots right through. You never know. I don't know. Lincecum, I guess, was a little bit different because I can recall folks saying that even when he was still pitching in college, guys would say, that's the dumbest pitch I have ever seen in my 40 years of covering baseball. No one's ever thrown that before. What? So that's a guy you expect to just immediately show up and win Cy Young's, I guess, but you never know how quickly a guy might progress is my point, I think.
I gotcha. So next up, we've got a guy that only played 3 games in the minor leagues because he's been spending so much time up in the big leagues, Richie Palacios.
Never a bad problem.
That is never a bad problem.
So he, in his 3 games,
he walked 3 times, struck out 3 times, had 5 hits, one of them a double, and 4 singles, scored 4 runs, sported a pretty impressive 143 WRC+. So can't complain about that.
I appear to have struggled a little bit compiling the stats for him.
Well, it was only three games, so
his slash line came out to a fairly impressive 357, 471, 429. Certainly not slacking off.
No, and it seemed like handled the temporary demotion to AAA pretty well, because he got brought right back up.
What were his stats at the major league level?
I know he's the other day he had like two hits, but at the major league level, nothing crazy. He made 15 plate appearances, got four hits, scored a run. He stole a base.
Boom. Don't give it back, man.
Yes, he did steal a base. And he only struck out once. So he's making contact. Just not quite enough solid contact. So
I think the encouraging thing, too, is the three games that he was down, he annihilated the ball. So he clearly has nothing left to prove at AAA. He will be up more often than not from here on out.
I think he's a guy that gives us a unique flexibility because he can play second base and all three outfield positions.
And I had forgotten that he could do second base as well.
Yeah, I mean, he was drafted as an infielder. So he only converted to outfield last year just to make himself somebody that could help the organization more, basically adding flexibility to his skill set.
Never a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, especially when he looked at all the middle infielders Cleveland already had, and he went, I think I'm going to learn outfield too. Smart decision, because that got him up to the big leagues.
Hey, you're involved in fewer plays, so it's a little easier. What the heck?
Yeah, I think the thing I like the most is the fact that he's not striking out. So he's another one of those players that's going to go up and put together good at-bats at the major league level.
He eats his baseballs. Finally, we come to Junkensi Noel, the number 10 man, as voted on by readers of the website, coveringthecorner.com.
Yeah, interesting stretch there for Noel, 2 weeks. He did blast three home runs, but for the most part, he struggled a little bit. Only hit 200 with a 256 on base percentage during the past 2 weeks. But because of all the power, he also had three doubles as well. The slugging was almost 200 points higher than his on base at 450. So it basically balanced out his really high strikeout rate of 44% to give him 100 WRC plus over that stretch.
I'm going to be so frustrated if he ends up not being able to make enough contact to really use that power, man.
I think he'll be okay. I mean, he has not had a crazy high strikeout rate at any level before. And he played at this level last year for a little bit, too. He got promoted up there for the last, you know, maybe third of the season last year. So I'm hoping that, you know, it's just temporary, the high strikeout rate. Because let me double check. I mean, I'm almost certain that throughout his minor league career, his strikeout rate has been relatively lower. Yeah, like last year at single A, it was 16.7% in Lynchburg. So, and then it jumped up to 27, which was a career high after his promotion. And right now it's 34. So I'm hoping that he can get that sorted out.
He did lean into a couple, two hit by pitches over that stretch too. So,
and he is still hitting home runs. I mean, last year he hit 19. He's already got 9 this year, which I think is tops in the org.
Yeah, this is what's goofy about that. It ends up being, I guess, a WRC plus for that league of 100 somehow. So it's not, I guess, but baseball is funny. So we've got another fun set of guys that we wanted to highlight as five of the best from everywhere in the system. And one of them is a
repeat from last time. Mylan Tolentino, come on down. You are a repeat contestant on our top five players of the week. What did Mylan do to deserve this honor?
He went ahead and slashed 341, 412, 432 for a WRC plus of 141. He did it across 12 total games, hitting four doubles, scoring 10 times, driving in 7, walking 6 times, striking out 11 times. So standard aggression at the plate, I suppose, and stole a couple bases too. Just a pretty fantastic offensive week all around.
Which is funny. It was actually a down week for him compared to the 2 weeks before that.
Yep. He continues to be really, really good. And so there's a little bit of momentum propelling him onto the list this week, I think. But you got to highlight how well he's been playing.
Yeah. And this is a guy that is really not on anybody's radar in terms of top prospects, but he is playing like one. So I would not be surprised if when, like, say, MLB Pipeline updates its prospect rankings midseason, Milan Tolentino is going to make a huge leap from unranked all the way up to top 20, at least. Next up, we've got one of Milan's teammates on Lynchburg, Will Bartlett.
And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Will had a very impressive 2-week stretch here. Over the course of 12 games, he slashed .324 with a .444 on base, .647 slugging. He struck out 9 times and walked 9 times. And during that stretch, he hit 5 doubles with 2 home runs, scored 10 runs, knocked in 10 runs. So did a little bit of everything.
It's just a very balanced and satisfying stat card for the week, or for the 2 weeks. 34
as all things should be.
Yeah, 45 plate appearances.
Yeah, and for people that aren't familiar with Will Bartlett, he was a 9th round pick in the 2019 draft, and I think, yeah, he was a high school player, so he has taken his time. He was in the rookie league in 2019, where he actually put together a 117 WRC plus, so he was above average. But last year, he started, I think, at the rookie league again, and then got promoted to low A, where he is now. And he struggled, only had an 87 WRC plus for the season. This year, though, for the season, he's at 142 WRC plus. So it seems like he's figured it out.
Yeah, it's always fun when someone kind of makes the jump a little bit later in their minor league career.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what Mr. Bartlett is able to do here, because he is basically screaming for a promotion to high A. And for those wondering what position he plays, I believe it's first base over at low A.
Who did we have as our next contestant for this week?
This one should ring some bells. It is former first-round pick Will the Thrill Benson.
He just keeps playing well, it seems. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, for those that don't remember, he was our first-round pick the year we drafted Nolan Jones, Shane Bieber, Aaron Civale, and Zach Plesac.
So he slashed .243, .391, .595, good for a WRC plus of .156. And he was even a little unlucky, too. His BABIP was only .238. And across the 12 games that he played, he scattered 9 hits, one of which was a double, 4 of which were home runs. He scored 11 runs himself, drove in 7, walked 8 times, and struck out 12 times. Being aggressive. Stole 3 bases on top of it all. Why not?
Very nice. Yeah. Do you want to hear something crazy about that 2016 draft, by the way? Guess who else was drafted in the 2016 draft that is a current member of the Cleveland rotation?
Oh, 2016? Is it McKenzie?
No, Cal Quantrill.
I see.
He was actually the highest draft pick out of all of them.
Because he was drafted by the Padres, right?
Yep, 8th overall.
I forgot he was that. I forget he was that high a pick sometimes.
I was going to look at 2016 again for a second, just because I feel like there are a few players that I'm missing that turned into something. Who else made it?
Turn into something grand, Brian?
Well, Tanner Tully made it to Cleveland this year.
Indeed.
He got to make one major league appearance
during our little
COVID stretch. So, as a what draft pick round? 26th round draft pick that year. That round does not even exist anymore.
That's pretty sensational.
So good for Tanner Tully. And we've still got a couple guys in the system from that draft that haven't made it to the bigs but are still in the system. It's I think Gavin Collins is at – he's actually made it to Cleveland as like a backup catcher in like this in a September call-up type of situation. Ben Crowth is currently a bullpen guy in AAA. Trenton Brooks has been playing in AAA.
He's had a few real good weeks too. Yeah, it'd be fun. I guess the question becomes, when can you sit down and do a retrospective on a whole draft class, right? Because it's been a very fun one, and I know there's been some work.
Well,
about
this pitchers, article was written by me in 2019, looking back 3 years. So that was, you know, it's been 3 years since then. So
maybe it's time. So picking back up on our countdown, we've got Rodney Boone, who you went out and picked, and boy, were you right.
Yeah, Rodney Boone, man. Eighth round pick in last year's draft. He made three starts. ERA was 0.53 over those three starts. And in that time, he pitched 17 innings, struck out 17, walked two, only gave up eight hits. So his whip was just ridiculous. Like, I'd say like 0.6 or so. Had just one earned run allowed. Very, very impressive young man, or performance by the young man. So showing some luck here.
Two.
That's kind of crazy considering how few base runners he had.
And yeah, who the hell knows who keeps score at some of these games? maybe it was a passed ball. I don't actually really care about wild pitches that much. He had just some of the... It's one of the best three-game stretches we've seen since we've been covering guys for the last 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm...
And
I'm,
yet
I'm
you yawn as if...
Sorry. It had nothing to do with anything being boring. That's just... But no, seriously, Rodney Boone has been one of our most impressive draft picks besides Gavin Williams from that last year's draft so far. Like you would think that it would be some of those other, you know, second, third, fourth round, fifth round pitchers that we took. And, you know, it's been Boone, the eighth round pick. So I think in terms of order, I think you go Gavin Williams clearly has been the best because he's also done it at a higher level. Boone's been doing it at low A.
He should be getting a shot higher up the ladder soon.
But he should absolutely be getting called up here soon. I mean, he has earned it, clearly.
As an aside, Rodney Boone very much feels like a Big 12 quarterback name. Although I will note that Oklahoma has very recently upped the ante with General Axel Booty. Very real name of a quarterback who will be playing for Oklahoma this year. We thought Colt McCoy was wild. Buddy, we're, like I've posted somewhere, we're past the fourth wall and we're looking for a fifth at this point. And so you bet your ass General Booty is starting quarterback for the good old Red River rivalry. Finally, we have Xavien Curry, who had another sensational stretch of three games. Did he not, Brian?
Yeah, which has been crazy because Curry has spent part of this season as like a piggyback partner for somebody else because Akron has such a loaded rotation that they don't have room for a five-man rotation. Like somebody put together the information on how good Akron's rotation is this year. Yeah, listen to this. It says the Akron rotation of Espino, Logan Allen, Joey Cantillo, Xavien Curry, Hunter Gaddis, and Tanner Burns has faced 632 batters. They have struck out 222 of them. 35.1% strikeout rate on the season as a starting rotation. Only six pitchers in all of Major League Baseball have struck out more than that. And that's what our entire rotation has done at AA.
That is not only stupid, but it is dumb. That's how good it is.
Yeah. But... So Xavien, though, he has been starting regularly because Espino's been missing a couple weeks here. And yeah, Xavion was elite, just straight up nasty during these three starts. He went, let's see here, 16 2/3 innings. So he went one out less than Rodney Boone did, but he struck out 6 more. So struck out 23, walked 4, gave up 2 earned runs, only threw 1 wild pitch compared to 2. Ha ha. Yeah. So with that extra run allowed, it brought him up to a 1.08 ERA, which is sensational. So, yeah. Yep. So he is right. Honestly, he is right back at that form that brought him up onto everybody's radar at the end of or at the beginning of last season, when I think he started the year without giving up a run over like 4 straight starts and just mowing people down. So, yeah, if it wasn't for all the other 5 guys in that rotation, we'd be talking more about Xavion Curry. But it's just honestly, there are, in my opinion, that rotation alone of 6 guys has more talent than several teams' entire minor league systems of pitching.
Yeah, it's quite the arm barn, I guess. I don't ever want to suggest that we have too many starting pitchers of a certain quality, because that's insane, isn't it? But
yeah, and it's not insane. It's because we'll need them. You know, the starting rotation has been, you know, a little inconsistent for Cleveland this year at times, and it's not at that same level in Columbus right now. So in terms of available starting pitchers, you know, these guys are more like half a year away for Cleveland.
Well, but I wouldn't totally discount the possibility that we see one of them late this season.
It could happen. That's why I said half a season. That's why, yeah, I said about half a season away.
Oh, so, I thought you said a season and a half.
No. Half.
I'm a dweeb. So, sorry.
But no, they definitely could. They need a little bit of AAA seasoning, but they're right there. And there's really nobody. Like, we have guys like the Peyton Battenfield and, you know, Connor Pilkington's at AAA right now. Tobias Myers, like guys that are on the 40-man roster ready, but these guys are all knocking on the door, all of them. So they're increasing that pressure to perform at AAA for all those other guys.
Never a bad thing. Well, that wraps up the top 5 guys from around the system. And brings us to the Carnegie. I just can't do intros today. This sucks. The Carnegie Cupboard.
Well, tell us about the Carnegie Cupboard.
We set aside a couple of players, 1 hitter, 1 pitcher each, and keep track of them just for fun, aside from the usual, here are the top guys in the system, here are the top performers in the system. Just a couple of players we found interesting. And so I have Daniel Schneeman and Jack Leftwich at the moment. And Brian, who do you have?
Will Brennan and Will Dion, the battle of the Wills.
We have 4 Wills on the podcast this week.
Yeah.
So do you want to go ahead and kick it off? Do hitter, hitter, pitcher, pitcher again?
That works for me. Will Brennan continues to perform at Double A. Over the 2-week stretch, he had a 133 WRC plus, slashed 262, 340, 500 for Akron. In 2 weeks, he knocked in 16 runs. And that's over 11 games. That's a Jose Ramirez-esque right there. 4 doubles, 2 home runs, walked 4 times, struck out 5. Just elite, elite, elite. Like, this guy definitely going to be soaring up the prospect ranks. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but my talent evaluator skills are doing pretty good so far this season.
Mm-hmm. So Daniel Schneeman, my current hitter in the Carnegie Cupboard.
Let's hear about your talent evaluation skills.
So he slashed 100, 174, 100. Good, okay, for a negative 32 WRC plus.
Oh, no.
He struck out 40% of the time and walked a little more than 5.5. This was 9 games, 35 total plate appearances, striking out 14 times. A little tough, but he did go ahead and steal 2 bases.
There you go. Knocked in 3 runs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only, you know, one fifth the man that Will Brennan is in RBI production.
It's a little wild thinking about, like, how the stat actually tries to describe the thing, right? Because in some cases it is like, oh yeah, he's literally twice the hitter, twice the man, twice the human being, frankly. Look at Mike Trout. Seriously, you guys?
He's anyway. On my fantasy team. I look at him a lot.
Moving along to pitchers, Will Dion had quite a week too.
Yeah, Mr. Baby Kershaw had three games started, and over that time period, he pitched 13 innings, allowed three earned runs, seven runs though. So that is a little concerning, although it probably did have something to do with bad defense if four of those runs were unearned. During that time period, he struck out 13, walked four, so not elite, but good. I'd say above average, even. Just at 2.08 ERA, since that eliminated the four unearned runs. And, still gave up less than a hit per inning. You'd hope for a little bit less than that, but striking out at least one per inning. So, can't complain. Just hoping he can keep it going.
Over in my side of the cupboard, Jack Leftwich ended up pitching six innings over the last couple of weeks. Struck out 10 and walked three while allowing three runs total. Walked three guys as well. So it was good for an ERA of 4.5. I think the most encouraging thing to look at here is his overall strikeout rates. He struck out 15 per nine, or 40% of the guys he faced. So however you want to slice it, that's great in terms of just straight up missing bats. So you want to keep an eye on control a little bit, I guess. And he's also going to be a guy who I assume they try to keep stretched out as much as they can, given that he has been a starter. And if a guy can be a starter, you would like to have that rather than a reliever, ideally. So we'll keep an eye on what sort of opportunities he gets.
So I think that'll bring us to our transactions for the past 2 weeks. Okay, there's a couple pretty big ones. So 2020 first round pick Carson Tucker was placed on the injured list in Lynchburg with a right forearm strain. Tanner Burns, who we were just hyping up, was placed on the injured list with a right shoulder strain in Akron. And then we mentioned it during the show, but Brian Rocchio, he was placed on the injured list May 9th with a concussion, but then was activated May 16th. So he only stayed on for the 7 days for the concussion, which is good. Other than that, Jerson Ramirez was activated from the injured list by Akron, and outfielder Chris Roller was promoted to Columbus from Akron. And that's about it. Let's see. Yeah, it just looks like Zach Hart was assigned to Lake County from extended spring training. Other than that, nothing real crazy. I'm hoping that the big transaction in our next podcast is the activation of Espino and Nolan Jones. And Wolf. Josh Wolf.
So we did not actually have a call for questions this week. And so I made a joke tweet saying that we would belittle anyone who dared ask. But we actually got a really good question from Leo asking, who is the best baseball prospect in Cleveland that doesn't play for the Guardians? So
I've actually got players, a good answer. I've got
high school a good answer. Players. I figured you would. So let's go ahead and hear it.
So he is a professional athlete that does not play baseball. Former UFC heavyweight champion of the world, Stipe Miocic. He actually played college baseball in the Cleveland area, I think Cleveland State, and was getting scouted at the major league level, but decided to kick people's asses for a career instead. And became heavyweight champion, became the most decorated heavyweight champion in UFC history. He had the longest reign. He only, in his last fight, he lost his title, but He actually would do off-season training with Yan Gomes, and they brought him into Cleveland to do batting practice one day, and he hit a home run. So he's got some pop. So I took that answer seriously, damn it.
No, I thank
I took
you.
That question seriously.
I did not know this bit of knowledge, and I am now happier for knowing it. And it just goes to prove, like, there's a certain type of elite athlete that, you know, they really can just kind of do it all. It's pretty amazing.
And let me check, double check where he went. Yeah, he did play at Cleveland State University. So
this is a genuinely awesome answer to the question. Thanks, Brian.
You're very welcome. You know, what's funny is you go to his Wikipedia page, there's a picture of him at a game at Progressive Field.
Very cool. So I believe, though, that this will bring us to the end of the podcast for the evening. And so I wanted to ask you, would it be acceptable for me to read a selection from a poet that I've enjoyed for some time?
Oh, please do.
Okay. His name's E.E. Gammings, if you're familiar.
I am.
Perfect. Well, I will go ahead and get started here. Take me out to the press conference. Take the flamingo out to the writers.
Most of the time, we talk about tech in terms of a handful of gigantic companies, like Google, Meta, and Apple. But some of the most interesting stuff we find online is the product of a single person.
When you're working on your own, I think there's this beauty of being able to come up with an idea and then implement it then in that moment. You don't have to have permission from someone else. There's no red tape.
In the Vergecast series, Solo Acts, we'll get to know these people, the tech they use to get stuff done, and the obstacles they face trying to compete with the giants.
Some people that I talk to and my friends are like, you know, your competitors are Zuckerberg and Musk. Like, aren't you kind of like afraid of that?
Every Monday, our friend Ashley Esqueda will be curating and hosting these interviews and sharing with us what she's learned.
I can't believe the McRib locator was originally a tornado locator.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Listen to our Solo Acts miniseries now in the Vergecast feed, anywhere you find podcasts.